Welcome to the University of Michigan Press podcast, featuring interviews with University of Michigan Press authors.
Welcome, Tamarack. Thank you so much for being here. We're really excited about your new book, Whispers of the Ancients. It's a collection of legends from around the world, and it's exquisitely illustrated by your co-author, Moses Amik Beaver. We wanted to ask you a few questions today, and the first question is, why do you think stories are important to us as human beings?
Well, thanks. I'm glad you invited me over to talk about the book. I'm really excited about it. It turned out phenomenally as far as Amik and I are concerned. And your first question is really relevant. I'd like to begin by speaking for Amik because he's not here. He's a Northern Ojibwe, and when we sat down to talk about the book and initially planning the book, he told me the story of his people, which was a sad story. Essentially, what he said was that when they lost their stories, they lost their culture. And the reason he got involved with this book project is that if these stories can be restored, he knows the traditions and the culture can be restored. The reason these stories are so important for Moses, the core reason, is that life is story. And when we know our stories, the stories come alive for us. The stories are metaphors for our own lives. The characters' adventures become our adventures, and the details in the story are merely symbols. They're symbols for our own thoughts and our own personal dreams and our fears.
I see that Amik's people will get their stories back, but we'll get our stories back too. And I can see how you would go all over the world to find some of these stories. Do you think the stories contained in the book share any similarities of structure or approach?
Well, yeah, they certainly do in a few ways. The primary way is that the stories are all geared to an audience. The first thing a storyteller does is to take a generic story and form it, shape it, and structure it so that it is meaningful to the audience, so that it's relevant to the audience. And secondly, the stories, any stories can't help but share similarities because they have a fundamental relationship. They all come from the same core, which is known generically as the storyline. It's the great story that contains all stories. And what a storyteller does is to pull from the storyline to get the best story for the now, the best story that's going to fit the audience right in the here and now. And secondly, the whisper stories, they share a fundamental relationship through the illustrations. The illustrations are based on petroglyphs that are found throughout northern Canada. What Amik did was to travel around and visit these petroglyphs. The elders would take him to these various petroglyphs, and the elders would interpret the stories of the petroglyphs. So what Moses did was to weave these stories into his artwork, and the artwork itself tells the story if you know the rhythm of the petroglyphs. In the book itself, the stories are grouped together by theme. An example is chapter 9, the winter stories. They are featuring Nanobojo, who's the culture hero of the Ojibwe people. And perhaps the similarity of the stories, of all the stories, that is most important to me as a storyteller is that they are entertaining. If a story doesn't entertain, it's not going to be heard. And the core message of the story is not going to touch people if it doesn't hold their interests. And when this doesn't happen, when a story isn't working, when it's not entertaining, I don't see it as the fault of the story, but as the fault of the storyteller, and it gives me the opportunity to sharpen my storytelling abilities.
Wow, what an amazing story behind the stories. What's your favorite story, and why?
Wow, that is a difficult question, mainly because it doesn't have an answer. I couldn't give a straight-up answer for this. It really depends on who's asking me the question as to what would be my favorite story of the moment. Because storytelling is interactive, for a story to be relevant, the story must address both the person I'm speaking with, and it has to address the now. It has to be relevant to the person in his life, in the here and now. Now, if it was you who asked me to tell you a story, Now, because you're asking me for my favorite story, I have an audience, so I can choose a story. And because I don't know you very well as an individual, I would probably choose a generic story that speaks to some of the core questions that we all have. Who are we? Why are we here? What makes us human? And the story I'd probably choose was the first story in the book, How We Came to Wear the Skins and Furs of Animals, because it talks about these core questions we all have. Now, speaking from a more personal perspective, each story that I share, each story that I carry, is really a part of me, just like my heart and my liver and my lungs are a part of me. And there's no way that I could choose one organ within my body as being a favorite organ, because they all work together in synchronicity. They're all a part of me. So all of these stories are my favorites.
Well, you picked right for me. I love that story. But the stories do cover so many different facets of the human experience: anger, jealousy, self-discovery. How did you go about collecting all these different tales?
Well, that may be an assumption on your part, because I didn't, at least not consciously. I didn't go out with the intent of collecting a group of stories for a book. These stories are my life, and they came from living my life. When I was in my early 20s, I started hitchhiking around the country to look for elders I could establish relationships with, traditional elders who still had some of their old ways of living and of being. And we would sit around the campfire at night, or I'd sit in their house at the kitchen table, depending, and they'd tell me stories. And they chose the stories to tell to me because they were relevant to my life. And these stories just became a part of me, and I carried them along with me. A few of the other stories came together, at least in the form that they're in the book, with Amik and I sitting down and sharing our versions of the stories, and also looking at his artwork. And the stories came together in the form that you know them in the book. Two examples are Night of the Windigo. Amik would tell me his childhood, if you can call them adventures, childhood traumatic experiences, you might say, with Windigos. And his stories factored into the story that's in the book. And another one, The Scream That Stilled the Forest. It's a haunting story, which comes in part from Amik's childhood experiences as well. And something that virtually all storytellers know and story listeners may not be aware of is the fact that the setting often becomes a part of the story. For example, in many of these stories, you're going to see that the North Country factors in as a setting for the stories. And when a story is told, the storyteller will often begin by describing the weather and the scene in which this story occurs in order to bring the story home, in order to make the story relevant to the people of the area. So you'll see that several of the stories in the book carry a North Country theme, which has just become a natural part of the story. And a couple of the other stories in the book have come from friends. For example, the story that opens the book, Bejig and the White Bear, came from a friend who stopped by and told me about his son who was struggling with drug addiction. And a friend of theirs stopped over who had just spent some time with the Yupik people up in northwestern Alaska. And he heard a story there that was very relevant to someone finding their own power and not relying upon the power of a substance. So this story came to me through that experience, and it's meaningful to me because of my friend's son's struggle with drug addiction. Another story, The Woman in the Talking Feathers, came from my mate Letty, who's Mayan. Her ancestors are Mayan, and this story was passed on through her Mayan ancestors and came to me in this way. And I guess to sum it up as far as how these stories came to me, it's the fact is that to me they're not my stories. These are universal stories. I find them in my study of cultures around the world and in some of the cultures I've been privileged to have immersion experiences with. Even though these stories were isolated from each other, I still found the same stories. They're universal. They're everywhere. They're a part of all of us. They're a part of all of our heritages.
That's fascinating to find the same stories in such remote areas. So these are human stories, and it seems like no matter who we are or where we are, we can really resonate with them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my last question is about just that. In an ideal world, how would you want people to enjoy the book? Where would they be? What would they be doing? And what would they be thinking about?
Wow, that's a profound question, and it really ties together the reason that Amik and I got together to do the book. And again, I'd like to start from his perspective because I'm here speaking for him as well. For him, what he would like to see done with these stories is to have the stories help bring the culture back to his people. These are about cultural restoration as far as he's concerned. He travels around a lot to the reserves in northern Canada where his people live. He has relatives that are spread all throughout northern Canada, and he goes to help with cultural restoration with the children. He goes to the schools and he organizes summer camps, and through his artwork he helps to reinstate the spirit and the feeling of the culture. And one thing that he found was missing is that his artwork is essentially a substitute for the petroglyphs. The petroglyphs are there yet. Because the culture is dead, the elders are no longer in touch with the stories of the petroglyphs. And they're just old paintings on old stone out in the wilderness. And what Moses does is to bring these petroglyphs alive through his artwork. He's bringing them back to the people. And still there's an element missing because there's the visual component that he does very well, but there's not the audio component. There's not the elder there telling the story again with the petroglyphs giving the vision of the story. And he sees our coming together through this book as bringing the two together again. And he's going to take this book. He's going to take boxes of this book, in fact, to the reserves, and he's going to spread this book out. He's going to use this book as a tool to reinstate the culture, to help reinstate the culture. Now, personally, the stories are meaningful to me because they're healing stories, they're awareness stories. I'd like to see people turn to these stories when they're confused, when they need insight, when they need perspective. This is when the stories really speak. There's an experience that really touched me. I was sent a video from a school, an elementary school, and the fifth and sixth graders in the school chose a story from the book to present as a play, and the whole school got together. They did the props, they did the costumes, they were involved in the writing of the screenplay, and they did it as a community presentation, and it turned out beautifully. They invited the elders from the neighboring reserves to come and view the play, and it was tremendously touching because these kids and the teachers and the community people involved took this story, which was seemingly from another culture in another place, and they made it theirs, and it touched their hearts. It was just a beautiful example of how stories are universal, and I'd like to see these stories used more in this way, to bring these stories into the schools, to make the academic experience relevant to life. And the last place that I'd like to see these stories told is, which is actually the first place these stories are told, and that is in children's bedrooms. My kids grew up with these stories, and now the stories with the illustrations contain that magical component that just a verbally rendered story doesn't have.
To learn more about our books, visit us on the web at press.umich.edu. This podcast has been brought to you by the University of Michigan Press, all rights reserved.